keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And do you think that history is repeating itself, as the guest just said?
No. No, I disagree with a whole lot of stuff he said. I respect what he does,
yeah,
but I disagree with him with a whole lot of stuff.
I think it's more, it's deeper than
I don't know.
Any time I've ever seen it.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand, when I hear things like that, I'm wondering, where are you getting your information from? That's my question, because, Benedict Arnold is how I see this, but 10 times over. How are we repeating ourselves when you have a president of the United States who is strong-arming another nation?
Well, he's comparing other presidencies, and he used Nixon for one. But, you know, they tried to justify the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean,
this is different.
It's
much more
in terms
different.
Of distraction. That's what he was saying.
I've seen
more distractions.
No,
I mean, because
the reason for the distraction is obstruction. When you use executive privilege as your reason for not cooperating, and you blame the other party for having no evidence, but you don't have any evidence because you're obstructing the evidence, and you're using that as a distraction.
You don't want the evidence to come out because you're lying.
Exactly.
I mean, that's simple as it is.
So I understand what he's saying, but at the same time, I'm like, well, that's sort of a stretch, because we're watching a burglary in plain sight.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know,
I just, you know, I see this different as well.
And I'm wondering,
but he studied, years and stuff
that.
To,
I get that.
You know, come to that conclusion
okay.
that he drew.
Okay. I don't disagree with him in terms of his studying, but I'm looking at what's before me right now.
Yeah. Well, okay. And his definition of it mm-hmm. is different.
Yeah.
You know, because this is like wickedness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just wicked.
It's evil.
It's
evil.
You know, it's the every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, a new distraction,
mm-hmm.
you know, and.
And here's another thing that most people, because there's so much coming at us so quick that it's hard to digest all this stuff. So if you're in your car
well,
and you're unable to keep
is.
Up. Yeah. And they don't understand what's going on. Well, then last night sent chills down my spine when I was watching the report that I wish I had her name, but the Ukraine ambassador.
Oh, that, Ivanovich.
Yes, Ivanovich. That somebody, and we still don't know who, was tracking her every move to the degree that they knew when her phone and her computer was on.
Yeah.
And reporting that back to a person that's connected to the Ukraine or Russian government and a congressman here or someone who was trying to run for office here to the degree, and all this leads back to Giuliani and Trump.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, that is just so
wrong.
And mind blowing because
it's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why there's the massive cover up.
Yeah. So, you know,
and you know,
I'm just at a loss of words.
And for people to stand people there and say, don't have an explanation for
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And for people to stand there and say, well, no, he shouldn't be removed from office. No, he didn't do anything wrong. The economy is good. My 401k is good. But I'm thinking, but you know what? You can't take it with you.
I can tell you a lot of people aren't doing good in the economy.
At the end of the day, you can't take it with you. And at the same time, we see news today that Vladimir Putin is making yet another move
yeah.
to consolidate power in Russia so that he can stay in power.
Yeah.
So
he can rule the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's you know.
And we change leadership every 4 years.
Well, they're not going to do that.
Yeah. So,
okay. They're not us, and they clearly are not going to do that.
And what our country will be forever weakened if they allow him to get away one with obstruction of justice. Even if you don't believe that the president of the United States, even for whatever crazy reason you believe that he didn't do anything wrong.
That he's a glorified, sanctified saint.
That he's anointed. You know, Regina and I was talking about this last night to the religious right. He's anointed.
Right.
Right.
He's working for Jesus.
Right. He's got people covering up for him for everything. How is that anointed?
Ooh.
But the other thing you should be worried about is the fact that he can just block Congress from seeing any documents, any witnesses, anything, and just saying no.
Yeah.
And so now you don't have
three. Well, if you're innocent, why do you go to that length?
Exactly.
So clearly, that is wrong.
Yeah.
Clearly, he's guilty.
He's the chosen one.
Yeah, he's chosen all right. You're right about that, but not for what you're saying. So I just, some of what the person, author said,
I agree with some of what he said, but again, with the danger.
Well, I think the other co-author.
Mm-hmm. Might have brought some more balance.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the role that his mm-hmm. some of his writing in there probably.
Yeah.
Made the decisions in some of the book.
And I understand that Nixon tried to distract by doing this and doing that and blaming, Democrats and saying it was, I wouldn't say a witch hunt, but some of the it does parallel some of the things that he tried in order to stay in power, a hit list and going after his political enemies and things of that nature. There is some parallels there, but again, we're talking about a break into a building to get dirt on a political opponent or get information versus taking advantage of another nation that's at war and then moving people around in government and firing people and threatening people and blocking people.
But with the war, we had 150,000 dead.
Yeah.
People's lives are gone.
Yeah.
Or they are dealing with mental health issues or mm-hmm. homelessness or
Agent Orange and
any other number of
now
things.
PTSD and a bunch of other things.
So to me it's like that is equivalent to or close to weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist.
Yeah,
that same type of
taking out this terrorist. The way it was done again it was was a distraction.
Yeah. Well, I see the signing of this deal with China today as another distraction.
Yeah.
So, it's just like you get at a point where, as human beings, I think we get to a point where you can't keep tricking the trigger.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to slide over the top of people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what
the
plan
hope is.
And
the hope is that no one is paying attention.
Right.
Maybe you get those people, I don't care. I just think this. I think that they should give him a chance.
Right.
And I think they're picking on him. But don't you remember 8 years of Obama? The day he was sworn in, Mitch McConnell and meeting in the basement talking about something, we're going to make him a one-term president. What happened to all that?
No one remembers that except for the people that
support
Obama.
What about Obama was the Antichrist?
Right.
Remember John Hickey preaching from Cornerstone out there and talking about something,
No one remembers that except for the people who support it.
Matter of fact, the Cornerstone here in Nashville was saying that kind of stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll never forget that. Oh, yeah. The one right here in Nashville, that particular one, was saying that he was the Antichrist.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. They started preaching against him. Yep.
That sounds bad.
Now, all of a sudden, things are different.
Yeah. Well.
But what's that saying? Power corrupts absolute.
Yeah, wow.
The love of money
out.
Is the root of all evil.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that's what this is all about.
Oh, yeah.
Money and power.
Well, it's only going to take you so
hashtag
far.
Hashtag who shot ghosts.
it's just like it's only going to take you so far.
But you can't take it with you. So
no,
at the end of the day,
that's my point.
At the end of the day. Marsha Blackburn, all these people who are here in Tennessee who represent us, or some of us rather, put the Constitution first. I think your people will reward you much better in the end.
Well, she got rewarded. She got elected.
Yeah. Yeah. But
she got, and no one cared. She didn't care if a Democrat voted for her.
Yeah. But
again, she's in that part of the mm-hmm. her constituency there is. Wanting that's what they want.
Because
they don't want to hear.
Because they're hooked.
They don't want the light.
They
don't
can't,
want
they
to
can't
hear
get the
nothing
light.
Else.
Because they think he is the light.
Well, that's the what I was, you know, talking about, because that's the same kind of mindset that was happening when in the 90s, the hating of Bill Clinton and the hating of the Clintons.
I remember that.
It was that same kind of just obsessive.
Yep, around the clock.
Oh, Lord.
That's how, as a matter of fact, Fox News, Fox News should cut the Clintons a check because they built that network on the back of the hatred of Bill Clinton.
Truly,
I would never forget
that.
They
truly did.
They built the backup. They sure did.
And, you know, I meant to be able to go into more of that discussion with him.
They sure did.
In his book and see if it's in there. Because a lot of what I was reading as I was reviewing it, it is kind of 2000-y stuff, you know, and not so date. Well, they do in one of the early chapters, they do a lead up to how we got in this position that we're in now and how did we get here. In the prologue and in chapter one. And, you know, but I don't think they spent... They talk more about the corporate culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he did make some interesting points about
Newt
that.
Newt Gingrich, oh my goodness. Yeah. He invented the hate politics.
Yeah, well, if he didn't invent it, he helped put a branch of it out there.
He's the father of. The father of.
Anyway... Chuck is Commander Chuck will be giving us an update on the traffic on your way home this afternoon, and I hope that folks get home and don't have to roll through all the thunderstorms that are possible because we are continuing to keep our eyes out. The some flood areas advisories are out for some particular areas around Davidson County, the areas near the Stones River for sure, that are prone to having issues of flooding, etc. Our chance for continued rain is about 40, steady as it was today. It'll be like that tonight. And then we're looking good on Thursday, looking absolutely good. A little cooler than today, though, 50. And for those of you who are hitting the highway, going up I-24 to Interstate 57, 64 to I-70, going that direction.
It's going to be cold.
It's going to be, as you leave out of here Friday, if you leave Friday, 48 in Nashville.
And by Sunday, it'll be 22 degrees.
It'll be 26 here.
That cold?
Yeah. Whew. Well, no, 36. I think
36, okay. Just above freezing.
Yeah. But, you know, those 2 or 3 degrees make a difference on the road when there's any kind of precipitation out there.
It does.
So that's the difference between slipping and sliding and keep going, keep gliding. So that's what it looks like for you for tonight. Our low is not bad, 42. That's not bad, not bad at all. We are at 69.
It's pretty good.
That's 67, rather. That seems so crazy for this time of night.
Crazy.
You know, it's like 67.
That is crazy. I can remember a few years back when we had blizzards and snowstorms and freeze-overs and school closings, and they were complaining.
At this time
that,
of year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's just, you know, wow.
And now you can wear shorts today.
I'm sure there
were open toes and everything.
I am sure there were plenty of folks out there in them today for sure.
But this is also the kind of weather that you can get sick in.
Totally.
Quick, easy.
Yeah, totally, totally. Also, and Monday, you know, we have our annual
King Day speeches.
Programs.
Yes.
That air from 9 a.m. to 5.
Yes.
So we do hope that... in some part of your day that you'll turn the radio on.
Oh, they will.
To WFSK.
They will. Let them speeches not air. Isn't that the craziest? They won't say anything when they air, but let it not air.
Well,
and then what happened? You listen to, yes, I listen every year. Oh, well, we had no idea.
Well, you know, Some people have me on text. Yeah. Okay. They have. Yeah. They know how to.
Yeah. They won't say it, but let it not air. They'll let you know that they listen.
Yeah. So there's a few out there that keep me up on.
I enjoy listening to them every year.
Yeah.
Just sort of a reminder. Yeah. And hearing things that just make you go, wow.
Yeah. We didn't invent this. This stuff been going on for a long time. So be sure to tune in at 9. Prior to that, you'll have, of course, the best in smooth and contemporary jazz. But at 9 to 5 on Monday. Every year, we honor the life and legacy of Dr. King with our special programming, and we hope that you will join us and check it out. Maybe you might learn something or get a refresher course and feel good about why we are blessed to celebrate our annual King Day in the United States of America. Because I remember a time, and many of you out there listening to me now, remember a time when we weren't able to have it. Come on, somebody. Now, coming up next, how America's political parties change and how they don't. That is coming up next. So let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Heavy traffic out here now on the South Loop, the West Loop out in Wilson County. There's been a crash on the interstate, adding to that slowdown on 40 East at 840 in Mount Juliet area. As you head out again towards Lebanon, you'll hit that delay on 40 East at 840 because of that crash. 65 heavy back down into Brentwood. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from Silver Sand Soul Food Cafe at 937 Locklear Street. Enjoy home-style breakfast and lunch open Tuesday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Silver Sands, featuring popular family recipes passed down three generations, including smothered pork chops, potatoes and onions, salmon croquettes, fried chicken, mac and cheese, greens, hot water, cornbread, and so much more. Silver Sands, 937 Locklear Street, just like Mama used to make. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. For more information, visit SilverSandsNashville.com.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88, WFSK Historic Fisk University. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. Hey, hey. Also to the global family listening online at WFSKFM.org. Now, this hour's book, How America's Political Parties Change and How They Don't. And let me introduce the author, Michael Barone. He is a senior political analyst for the Washington Examiner and a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Additionally, he's also been a writer or editor with the Washington Post, the U.S. News and World Report, and Reader's Digest. Now, Michael, you have visited 435 congressional districts. So I'm certain you've been here, right?
Well, I certainly, most certainly have been in Nashville and Davidson County and in Sumner County, Robertson County, Williamson County, et cetera. Yes.
So no.
How can you know America if you don't know Nashville?
Well, now there you go. That's correct. That is absolutely correct. And since you've been in Davidson County, you know, we are unique in our state. Us and Shelby, we're the only two blue. Everything else is red. So.
Well, it is the two largest counties in the state in terms of population.
Yeah, yeah. What was your opinion of our districts here versus your travels around the United States? Are, you know, people just people?
Well, Nashville and Memphis, I was on a trip to Memphis not too long ago, and I must say that as somebody who's lived mostly on the East Coast for the last several decades, I was very suspicious of the people in Memphis. I found, encountered a number of people. They were all, and I may say it's interestingly, this is both black and white Americans. Mm-hmm. They were pleasant, helpful, going out of their way to be nice. Mm-hmm. They were polite and elaborate. And of course, my reaction as an East Coast resident was to say, "What's their angle?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are they after?" No, some of the nicest, most polite, and generous people in the country that I've seen have been in Tennessee and in metropolitan Nashville and Memphis. Interesting, combination of history, with Nashville going back to Andrew Jackson when he left the Carolinas and went over the mountains and into the Cumberland Plateau and so forth, and modernity and growing up and so forth, and the latest things. So very interesting encounter.
Yeah. Well, I would say for both cities, we are tourist traps, and people know how to play it here, honey, to get the tourists happy. That's how you do it. I mean, the music and the food and all the stuff that the trappings that make up these two cities, clearly the people here know how to play that hand, clearly.
Well, you get the roots of country music, you get the roots of blues, you get the roots of rock and roll, you get traditions that have been developed by black people in Tennessee, by white people in Tennessee, by churches and in evening clubs. It's a pretty great contribution to a very serious form of popular culture there.
Yeah, definitely. And Michael, you're within your travels. Is there a part of the country where you've gone in these congressional districts where it was the exact opposite of what you thought it was going to be?
Well, I don't want to get into blaming people and so forth. I must say, the last two Democratic and Republican national conventions that were held in Cleveland and Philadelphia, people in Cleveland were very nice and very helpful. Mm-hmm. And my observation was that people in Philadelphia tried to be very helpful and polite, but it's difficult for them.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of the economy?
No, it's because of the different popular cultures. I mean, one of the points that I made in this book that I wrote about how America's political parties have changed and how they haven't, is that, and how they don't, is that, we have always been a country of diversity, of, starting off with the British colonial period, religious diversity in a time when people had living memories of when great wars were fought in Europe over between people of different religions, of ethnic diversity, of regional diversity, and economic diversity. So, the characteristics of the two great metropolises of Tennessee that we've just been discussing are indications of diversity. And one of the things that our two political parties have done, often changing their positions on issues, but maintaining a certain basic character, a certain DNA, is giving people a chance to find a voice, a political expression in one of these two parties because of their the way that they approach the inevitable and diversity of American life.
Well, so I guess in your book, that's kind of what it's kind of like, don't give up. History is just repeating itself. Is that the overarching theme that, you know, it looks like the gloom and doom with the parties, but they're still going to exist?
Well, I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, that we hear that the Republican Party is going to cease to win elections. We hear that the Democratic Party is going to cease to win elections. I've been following this stuff for more than 50 years, so I've seen the these expressions come into being from time to time. But, you know, the Democratic Party is still there after 187 years, the oldest party in the world. The Republican Party is still there after 165 years, the third oldest party in the world. And by the way, the second oldest party in the world, the Conservative Party of Great Britain, just won a big victory. So after having electoral problems for some time. So, yeah, I think our Democratic and Republican parties, their basic character has stayed the same. The Republican Party is always based around a core constituency of people thought of as typical Americans, but who are not by themselves a majority. The Democratic Party has always been a coalition of outgroups, which taken together, when they unite, can be a majority. So they both have to struggle to win elections. We've had close elections for most of the last 30 years at the presidential level and in the congressional level in this country. Spirited competition, a lot of angry polarization, and we've had some surprises. So I think, you know, there's something basic about the character of these parties. In a diverse country, you can identify with the core constituency or you can identify with the outgroups. And in either case, you've got a political party which tends to go along with you on that, and a political party, either Democratic or Republican, that is certifiably and uniquely American.
So is it, I'm glad to hear you using the word diversity and not be scared of it, because some people are, and I don't know why, some are. Do you think that, and in your chapter three, Lessons from the Last Century, you cover a lot of territory in here and from the early days of the parties. Wasn't this diversity part of the division that existed within them?
Well, the diversity, you know, we've people say, have you ever found a period when there was more bitterness and you know, polarization? Well, we had something called a civil war, which was more bitterness and more polarization. And we had some people who were trying to, only a few people managed to be neutral in that war. One of my readings, I was told that Sarah Childress Polk, the widow of President James K. Polk, and a person who was actually his political secretary, powerful woman, he died in 1849. She stayed in their mansion in Nashville to her death in 1890. She proclaimed herself neutral in the Civil War and hosted generals of both sides. The Confederate generals when the Confederates were in charge, and then the Union generals when the Army under General Grant and Sherman were successful in capturing Nashville back for the Union. So there was a neutral person there, but not many. And I think, you know, we haven't had that kind of a split ever since.
Well, what is your thoughts on, you know, the news of now? The articles of impeachment delivered. And do you see, is this split, the parties, the hate, the divisiveness, is history repeating itself, or is this new?
Well, it's not repeating itself exactly, but I think it's in its particular form, causes and effects are unique to our time. But the mm-hmm. idea that you're going to get significant gulf between different political parties mm-hmm. Has been a feature many times in American life before. I mean, I grew up in Michigan, Detroit metropolitan area. There was a big division in the 1950s. Most, you know, the Democrats basically were allies of the United Auto Workers mm-hmm. Union. The Republican backed the management of the companies. There was a lot of bitterness then. There were two sisters who married. One of them married a UAW organizer, and the other married the man who became the son of the president of General Motors. The sisters didn't speak for 20 years.
Oh.
That kind of thing has existed in various ways, shapes, uh-huh. and forms. And when you have an electoral system, uh-huh. You don't just get sweetness and light between everybody uh-huh. because it's an adversary contest. Uh-huh. And only, you know, as we found out in 2016, only one person is elected president.
Right.
Sometimes it's not the person you expected. And often it's not the person that you voted or would have chosen if you were casting the deciding mm-hmm. vote. Certainly that's been the case in my life.
Yeah.
So there's a certain amount of grittiness and competition about that. It's not meant just to have everybody sit down and sing Kumbaya.
Mm-hmm.
But on balance, I think that, to paraphrase Winston Churchill, our mm-hmm. system has worked very poorly, worse than every other system except all those that have existed from time to time in mm-hmm. the course of history.
Now, in Chapter 4, you talk about challenging the two-party system. This challenge, is there something out there now where people are thinking of possible ways of how to challenge the two-party system now?
Well, there are certain ways of that. They don't seem to be getting very far.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing a movement like George Wallace in 1968 when he ran for president as independent, got 14% of the vote, rounded off nationally. We're not seeing, you know, John Anderson, the congressman from Illinois, Republican congressman, ran as an independent in 1980, got 7% of the vote. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing anything that's as big as that going on. When I look back to the really strongest third-party movement mm-hmm. in the United States history since the 1850s and the emergence of the Republican Party was Theodore Roosevelt's candidacy as a Progressive Party candidate in 1912. He was mm-hmm. He'd gotten the highest percentage of popular vote that any president had ever received in a contested election. He'd mm-hmm. served 7.5 years as president. And generally, we didn't have polling in those days, but he was a highly competent man and a highly popular person.
Mm-hmm.
He ran as a candidate of this party. This party ran candidates for Congress, for House of Representatives in a majority of the mm-hmm. congressional districts in 1912 and again in 1914. It had a very strong, base of, a chance to elevate itself into mm-hmm. One of the two major parties, and it just didn't make it. By 1916, 4 years later, the Progressive Party was basically gone. They weren't running congressional candidates. Theodore Roosevelt was supporting the Republican nominee. He went back to his old party, and that party just disappeared. So, and at the same time, we had that 1912 was the high point of the Socialist Party, which got, I think, 5 or 6% of the popular vote nationally. Mm-hmm. Socialist parties were advancing to major party status at that time in France, in Germany, in the United Kingdom, and so forth. It didn't happen in the United States. We stuck with the Democrats and with the Republicans.
So knowing that, we have these separations inside of our parties, because I hear Republicans all the time say it's you know, it's the Trump Party now. It's no more. You're saying that's not possible? Did I hear you say that? That's, you know, it's not.
Well, we
go ahead.
Well, we definitely see a majority of people who identify as Republicans, which is to say about a third of the country, something like that, say that they support President Trump. They express positive views about almost everything he's done.
Right.
They're supportive of him. So we don't see any significant opposition emerging to him. I guess, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, college classmate of mine, says that he may run, but he's gaining no significant support, as I'm sure he'd concede.
Yeah.
And similarly, we did not see, any significant Democratic opposition to President Bill Clinton, to President right. Barack Obama. President Trump, like the second President Bush, like President Reagan, has had really no opposition with inside his party.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, it's interesting. A party, we've got this sort of crazy system of choosing presidential nominees,
yeah.
which is, one of the few parts of our electoral system that's not covered, referenced in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, most people who identify with the Republicans seem to approve of President Trump.
Oh. Okay, when we come back from the break, it's just the hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. I'm just like, I can't believe y'all are upset. This is acceptable. Anyway, chapter 10, how the Republican Party sloughed off its liberals. And, oh, Lord, the L word. Oh, Lord, the liberals. The author is with me this afternoon, Michael Barone. He's senior political analyst for the Washington Examiner and several other media outlets as a writer and reporter. Been around a moment or two, and we're happy to have him on the show today. Author of several other books. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Still heavy traffic out here back down into Brentwood, Franklin, down 65 going south. Moving rank 65 south there at OHB. 7600 block of Highway 70 out in West Nashville. That crash involving some injuries. Still a lot of traffic here on 40 East trying to get past the airport out through Hermitage and Donaldson. This traffic report brought to you by Nikisha and Tony Tate at Exit Master Realty, the Tate team. That number is 615-554-9795. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Not many people hit their stride at 88 years old. Cabaret singer Marilyn May is the exception. Next time on Jazz Night in America, Marilyn May proves that she's not only still singing, but she's better than ever. An intimate performance with the Queen of Cabaret. I'm Christian McBride, and that's next time on Jazz Night in America. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from Nashville Public Library. Get help with your New Year's resolutions at Nashville Public Library. They have everything from Zumba and yoga to cooking classes and smoking support groups. You can connect to the best health websites for information you can trust, and it's all free. Learn more at library.nashville.org/bewell. At NPL. That's library.nashville.org/bewell at NPL. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88. WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Today's book, How America's Political Parties Change and How They Don't. Michael Barone is with me this afternoon. Happy to have him on the broadcast today to talk about the political parties. Now, Michael.
Well, I have to tell you one thing, because the Fisk University.
Yes, sir.
I had the honor of serving as a law clerk to Judge Wade H. McCree, Jr. of the United States Court of Appeal for the Sixth Circuit. This was half a century ago. Judge McCree was a scholar. He was a delightful man as well. With a taste for good music, an excellent judge, later Solicitor General of the United States. He was a graduate of Fisk University, summa cum laude, and very proud to serve on the board at Fisk and proud of Fisk and to be connected with it.
Oh,
so I have a happy connection by one with Fisk University.
Well, that's beautiful. You were his law clerk 50 years ago?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And let me write his name down. Tell me again what his name was.
Judge Wade H. McCree, M-C, capital C-R-E-E, Jr.
Okay.
And he served in the Army in World War II. He spoke Latin and Greek. And he served in a segregated military unit in Italy. And they did not have good leadership, in his opinion. Mm-hmm. So he taught himself to speak Italian. He used his Latin so he could speak Italian with the local folks there to keep his military unit safe and successful. Mm-hmm. So he was quite a gentleman, and then went to Harvard Law School after World War II on the GI Bill.
Did he ever say anything about here?
Oh, yeah. He was. He served on the board of directors, or the board of whatever the board is called at Fisk. There are different names at different universities.
The trustees.
And, he had a very warm place in his heart for Fisk and for the traditions that it represented.
I'm going to have to ask the librarians to tell me more about him. And I learn stuff all the time here, too. About different people in history. So it's really lovely to be in the atmosphere. Now, back to the book. I want you to... Chapter 10 and 11. I guess they're kind of... I mentioned, I think 9 or 10 before the break. But they're kind of close, sort of. So I want you to give us the overview on those, please.
Well, you talked about my chapter about how the Republicans sloughed off their liberals, the Democrats kind of sloughed off their conservatives. I think that some political allegiances arise from very searing experiences, the effects of which continue for many years. And one of those was the Civil War and the conflict in values which were behind it. You had many people in the southern states, including much of Tennessee, certainly middle Tennessee, that continued voting Democratic is a kind of heritage from the Civil War that lasted a long, long time into the 1960s. And even later, and the if you wanted a political career, you would try to advance in the Democratic Party because the Republicans almost never won an election.
Right.
And you had corresponding adherence to Republican Party in many parts of the far north states in the country, famously. Maine and Vermont, the two states that Franklin Roosevelt did not carry in 1936. Nowadays, of course, those things have changed, but basically, that continued until we had the Civil Rights Acts of the 1960s passed, until we had the end of legally enforced racial segregation, until we had, after a while, the Civil War didn't matter that much anymore, and you have Southern white voters who had been voting Democratic for years, they or their offspring or their successors were more aligned with the Republican Party on issues of foreign policy, on issues of spending policy and certain government domestic acts, and they ended up going ultimately for the Republican Party. You have Black Americans, African Americans voting where they were allowed to vote heavily Republican from the Civil War period until the 1930s, almost unanimously Republican. We have, in Chicago, the last Republican congressman, or last Black congressman in the 19th century elected in 1898 from North Carolina was a Republican. The next African-American elected to Congress in 1928 in Chicago was a Republican. He was replaced by a Black Democrat in 1934, emblematic of the switch of many Black voters to the Democratic Party. And for the last 50 years, you've been getting in most elections, African-Americans voting 85% to 90% for the Democratic Party candidates. Except in some unusual circumstances in state elections. Whether that will continue, we don't know. But in any case, that has been the pattern. And it makes sense, really, for people who identify with an immutable characteristic, which makes them the targets of racial discrimination, the target of actual violence and murder. From the Ku Klux Klan days of the 1870s until, summer in Mississippi in 1964, to have unity, to vote for one political party, which they think would be more in their interest to vote for, and so forth. So that has been one factor, but the circumstances changed in the 1930s, in the opinion of most Black voters, and they changed party. Perhaps something like this may happen again. You hear some strategists around Donald Trump saying, well, you may have some significant percentage of Black voters who, for reasons similar to what some white working class voters who historically were Democratic decide to change their mind and support the Donald Trump Republican Party. We don't know if anything will come of that or if that's just dreaming about that. But that's a subject of discussion. And, we'll see what happens. But those tactics kept a lot of conservatives in the Democratic Party for many years. And what kept a lot of liberals in the Republican Party was that they looked around America and they thought the Democratic Party, even though it included some people that agreed, many people that agreed with them on liberal issues, also had Southern segregationists in it. They didn't like Southern segregationists. They favored civil rights. That had corrupt political bosses in the big cities, or so they felt. It had the support of labor unions, some of which were corrupt, and many of which, and these liberal Republicans tended to be sort of more free market, more believers in corporates, corporation management, and so forth. And so they identified these enemy forces with the Democratic Party. Those forces all became less important in the Democratic Party. Labor union membership fell. The big city bosses were really replaced by different people as many voters move to the suburbs.
Yeah.
And the segregationist Democratic politicians retired, died, or passed, or were defeated or passed from the scene. And so the things that these liberal Republicans didn't like about the Democratic Party ceased to exist. And guess what? Their sons and they or their sons, daughters, equivalents, moved to the Democratic Party. Just as many Southern white conservatives moved to the Republican Party. But it's both cases, those were long processes because those ancestral beliefs were based on strong views and experiences, foremost of which is the Civil War, but also the persecution, discrimination, and violence, and threats of violence against Black Americans that were searing experiences.
Well, and as they've piled up underneath as the people that have been violent and are hate-filled, et cetera, have lined up under the Republican tent, is that not kind of worrisome for them? Are they happy
well, each
to
party
attract
that? Each party has some of the violent people. I mean, we had a man with a gun who came up to shoot the Republican congressman at their softball practice. He was a big supporter of Bernie Sanders, a Democrat running for president. Does that say Bernie Sanders supports violence? Certainly not.
No.
And in fact, he immediately, of course, expressed horror at this action. But we've had some violence from the left side of the political spectrum. And, you know, probably more instances of it, but it's not really typical, in my judgment, of either the Republican or the Democratic Party to say that they so. This is not like the Democratic Party of the 1870s, which really backs the Ku Klux Klan. And I mean, I've been reading some of the history of that period and the violence that was committed, the murders.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heartbreaking to read about this.
Yeah. Well, I would just expect them to speak up a little more, like Charlottesville, when the president didn't say anything and, you know, people just didn't say anything. And, you know, there were times that these various incidences have happened and folks have chosen to just ignore it or not say anything at all when you're in a position of, you know, leadership and authority, and people expect that. It just seems kind of strange for that person and the people that support that person to just not say anything. So that's why I was asking, because it just seems, you know, like an uptick. And I do realize that I think it was Steve Scalise was at the baseball game, and there were
really injured badly. Yeah, fortunately he survived.
Yeah,
it's now ambulatory.
Right. Now, let me ask you, because we were talking about the 90s and the political season and stuff before a little bit during the last hour. In Chapter 12, how partisan polarized parody came into be. You write, by 1990, it was widely held by political journalists that Republicans had a lock on the presidency and Democrats had a lock on the House of Representatives. So that seems true, right?
Well, that seemed true in 1990, and I remember giving a speech to Democratic members of the House, and I said, look, it may not always be true. It may come a time when you'll get a President Bill Bradley, the Democrat. I had the wrong bill, but the right idea. And you will have a speaker, Newt Gingrich, the Republican, at which point I heard John Dingell, the most senior member of Congress, went, ugh, at the idea of Newt Gingrich. But within 2 years, we had a President Bill Clinton, a Democratic president. And within 4 years, we had a Republican Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. So the old political rules are always true, until they're not any longer.
Well, you certainly have researched it long enough to make that statement for sure. What do you think about people who have had the discussion about getting rid of the Electoral College? You think that's they should pursue that or what?
Well, I think they shouldn't pursue it, because I think that, you know, you're not really going to get rid of the Electoral College. You've got a provision in Article 5 of the Constitution that says that we're never going to, you can't get rid of the equal state representation in the Senate without the approval of every state in the Union. It's the only provision of the Constitution that can't be changed in that way. And the Electoral College is also part of that. If you want to change the Electoral College, you got to get a constitutional amendment approved by the legislatures of 38 states.
That's not happening.
That's not going to happen. I think if you're, the Electoral College, the single-member congressional district, give a disadvantage to a party that tends to have its votes concentrated in relatively small geographic areas. In other words, if your party wins 70-30 in California, but it loses 53-47 in the rest of the country, you're at a disadvantage in both the Electoral College and in congressional representation, because you're spending 70% of you're spending a lot of your votes getting 70% in a limited number of seats. So Bill Clinton in 1996 carried in 1992 carried California by 13 points. He got the same number of Hillary Clinton carried it by 30 points, more than twice the margin.
Wow.
She got one extra electoral vote for that because California had gained the House seat in the reapportionment in 2000. So you want to spread your votes around more evenly. And my advice to the Democratic Party is, don't concentrate on increasing your majority in New York City and San Francisco Bay. See if you can adapt your policies and your appeals in ways that will appeal to people in places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, and so forth that you lost narrowly last time and which you have carried in the past.
So forget the focus that you focused on before and go to the states that you haven't, because those are where they haven't spent time or money at, isn't it?
Well, develop, the management of the Hillary Clinton campaign knew very well that the goal was to win 270 electoral votes. They were not ignorant of the Electoral College. They just didn't succeed in managing to do that. You either go back, try and win back votes that you won before, or as some Democrats advise, go try and win votes in states like Arizona and Texas and Georgia, where you haven't been winning lately. And where you have some reason to believe that you could increase your vote somewhat. So, both parties have had to adapt to terrain and to adapt on issues, and it's a lot easier to change your appeal slightly than it is and wait for issues that will help you do that in a positive way rather than say I got to get the legislatures of 38 states, including all these small states, to give up what they might think is their advantage in the Electoral College. You're going to get the Idaho legislature to do that? I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. Now, Michael, if you don't mind, I'd like to circle back with you later this year, since this is an election year and you are a political analyst. And I was like, man, he would be so interesting come close to, election time, because it's January and a lot of things can happen.
Yes, they can.
So I know that you pay attention and that your information would be interesting, to say the least. Is that okay? Can I do that?
Yes, ma'am. Wow. Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Be delighted.
All right.
Yes, I would be delighted. No, I, it's been a great pleasure to be with you, in connection to Fisk University,
absolutely,
for which I have a warm place in my heart.
I know. That makes me feel so much better. How America's political parties change and how they don't. Michael Barone, thank you so much. Tell the audience where the book is available and the rest of your work.
Oh, it's available at your friendly bookstore. It's available at Amazon. It's available through Encounter.com, Encounter Books.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and happy 2020.
Give it to your sweetheart. Give it to your sweetheart on Valentine's Day.
That's a read. Interesting read. Mike, have a wonderful 2020, okay?
Thank you. You too. Uh-huh. Thanks very much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Take care.
All right. Thank you so much. That his book is How America's Political Parties Change and How They Don't. Interesting perspective, political analyst. And then the first hour, United States of Distraction, Media Manipulation, and Post-Truth America. And this is an empowerment show. And doggone it, if you listen to the 411 show, you're going to learn something. All right, Nashville, that is A-L-L-O we have for you this Wednesday afternoon. You will have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.